Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There were several ambitious projects in the 1980s where the music industry tried to make a difference by raising money to make a difference. One of those projects happened in 1985 when dozens of musicians formed a supergroup called USA for Africa and recorded We Are the World. Written by Lionel Richie and Michael Jackson and produced by the legendary Quincy Jones, We Are the World included dozens of performers and a star-studded ensemble cast made up of some of the biggest names in music at the time. Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, Paul Simon, Willie Nelson, Kenny Loggins, Bruce Springsteen, Cyndi Lauper, Smokey Robinson, Bob Dylan, Billy Joel, Diana Ross, Huey Lewis, Hall and Oates, the Pointer Sisters, and more. They all walked into a studio where they were greeted by a sign that said, "Check your egos at the door." And most of them did. The finished product sold more than 20 million copies and was simultaneously played on 8,000 radio stations around the world. The project raised more than $63 million for famine relief in Africa, and nearly 40 years later, USA for Africa is still active in fighting poverty. In this episode of Prisoners of Rock and Roll, we're taking a look at We Are the World, the idea behind the project, the recording, and its impact. Let's hit it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Prisoners of Rock and Roll, episode number 73. My name is Bruce Kramer, and I'm behind the mic tonight with my very good friend and co-host, the one and only Ryan McCusker.
Are you rocking?
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. It was a good one.
Thanks.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, and our show is sponsored by Boldfoot Socks and McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia. What's happening, brother?
I don't know. I think I just woke up the whole neighborhood, bro.
It's all good.
I had to get a primal scream out, man.
Rock and roll stops for nobody. Doesn't matter what time it is.
Yes. So. What's happening with you, man?
Not much, dude. Not much.
Yeah. I mean, thanks for coming to the bar's 55th anniversary party. It was awesome.
Yes. I was going to talk about that in second thoughts, but man.
Yeah, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. Absolutely.
It was great to see everybody and, you know, shake some hands and met some listeners, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll get to it in second thoughts.
We are the world.
We are the world. We are the children. I think this is appropriate for like the Thanksgiving season.
Yeah, and this was fun because we were hanging out at the McCusker's Tavern 55th anniversary party, and we were talking a little bit of shop, saying, what are we going to do next? And you brought it up, and I was like, dude, again, another topic that's been on the list for a while. And I was like, yeah, dude, let's do it. And I don't know, man, I haven't listened to this song in a really long time.
I just think it was a major moment in music history. You know, looking back on it, maybe it's the song is a little cheesy, a little dated, but the idea of it was all in good faith in humanity, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, man. Well, and the song was produced by the legendary Quincy Jones, which you were saying you were watching a documentary on him this week, right?
Oh, yeah. There's an awesome documentary on Netflix. I think it's called Q. It's from the beginning of his career, his humble beginnings from life. Man, the list that he worked with at a young age, like he was like making Sinatra albums at a really young age, you know, like, and Sinatra said he was like one of the best producers they ever worked with because he would like rearrange things quickly if Frank didn't like it. And he was really impressed by that.
Quincy Jones is still alive. I mean, he's in his 90s, but that seems like the fact that he worked with Sinatra to me seems like it's like three generations ago, like how long ago that was.
I know. It's hard to believe. And on top of that, he was a horn player back, you know, in the bebop days. You know, that's how he first started in music. He was a trumpet player. And he grew up in Chicago. He grew up very poor. His mother was mentally ill, and she got taken away when he was way young, and his father was forced to raise him, and his father was just like, you know, like a piece of shit on top of it, you know? So like Quincy and his brother and sister basically just like raised themselves, you know?
I didn't know that. Yeah, I don't know much about Quincy Jones other than some of the artists that he worked with.
Yeah, I mean, this documentary was awesome. It was like 3 hours long, but it was great. I mean, the man was married like 7 times. He has he has billions of kids. That's why he makes all those hit records. He has support.
He's got to pay for everybody.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, I'll have to put him on my list. Yeah, I need to read some more about.
He is a good dude. I like him a lot.
Very cool. Yeah, man. So it was produced by him. But let's back up a little bit and get into the beginning of this because I was chasing down, like, where did the idea come from? And I don't think I realized this, but this came after Do They Know It's Christmas Time, the Band-Aid song.
Okay.
And Bob Geldorf, who we talked about last week from the Boomtown Rats.
I don't like Mondays.
Yes. Who also had a huge role in organizing Live Aid, put together. Right? He was Live Aid?
He definitely was.
Yeah, okay. I was like, I know a little bit about music, and it's like, shit. So Geldorf did Do They Know It's Christmas Time, which we're going to start hearing very soon, because by the time this episode comes out, it'll be the week of Thanksgiving. And Harry Belafonte, the Calypso singer, saw it and decided he wanted to do something, but with like black artists. So he called his manager, and his manager was this guy named Ken Cragen. And he called Ken and was like, hey, man, this is what I want to do. I want to do a tribute concert with black artists to raise money. And Cragen was like, no, man, let's do a song. So Cragen was a really, really big deal in the 1980s. And I had never heard of this dude before, but they said he had almost half of the artist who recorded top 10 records in the United States. Like at one point in time, he had about half of the top 10 artists. So he called Lionel Richie and he called Quincy Jones and was like, hey, Harry Belafonte's got this great idea. And then Quincy Jones called Michael Jackson because Quincy produced Thriller.
Sure. Biggest album of all time. Absolutely. Right.
And it was initially only going to be black artists and they were going to have like 20 people. But then Cragen was friends with Springsteen's manager and he called Springsteen's manager. When Springsteen said he was in, this guy, Ken Cragen, said, I didn't have to make another friggin' phone call. So once Springsteen was on, everybody was like, I want to do it. And then like, somebody, I'm just using an example, but like Bob Dylan would call and go like, oh, Springsteen's in, I want to be in. And then somebody Elton John would go like, well, Bob Dylan's in, I want to do it. And it just kept like, it wasn't Elton John, like Billy Joel or like everybody. It just kind of kept spiraling.
You know, it's crazy you talk about that. And I've been like, waiting for the show to set up today just before we do it. And I listened to We Are the World 2 times in a row. Springsteen has more parts in that song than anybody. And for you to say that makes so much sense why he has so much. I was wondering, how did he get so much time in this song when everybody got like a word here and there? Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he's coming off, he's one of the biggest. I mean, shit, most of these guys were like, I mean, they were enormous. I mean, the list of people that are on this, even the people that are in the chorus and don't have only, a solo? It's some crazy.
Dan Aykroyd's there.
Dan Aykroyd is in there. And I guess we could.
How the fuck does he get in there? The Blues Brothers.
Right.
I think we should go. I don't know. Do you think we should go like talk about each artist or?
Maybe. I'm not quite sure how to. Well, maybe let me talk a little bit about like the idea behind it, or like let's maybe leading up to the session, and then we'll get them all in the room, and then maybe, I don't know, I have them all in the order that they appeared in like the solos.
Awesome.
So maybe we can just kind of walk through that, and then at some point we're going to just play the whole song. I think we can get away with it without getting sued. Yeah. And we'll see what happens. But so this whole thing gets scheduled. And so they get everybody signed up and they're like, okay, cool. When are we going to do this? We got to do it in a time where everybody's in town. Yeah. We got to get everybody in the same place. So they do it on the night of the American Music Awards, since everybody's going to be there. And the American Music Awards go like, you know, kind of late at night. Instead of going to the after party, all these artists come afterwards. So they start rolling in at like 9 o'clock, and the recording session went until like 6 o'clock in the morning the next day. And, there's also a documentary about the making of this, which was really, I remember you said you were watching it. So I watched it this week. Yeah. And it was, you can see how punchy they're getting because it's getting so late.
Like
they're getting loopy.
They're all superstars. I mean, you know, like, but check your ego at the door.
Yeah. So Quincy Jones puts a sign on the door that says, check your ego at the door. Cause he's just like, I'm not putting up with any shit from everybody. And part of that, the checking to the ego of the door, was that the song was attributed to a group called USA for Africa instead of like individual artists.
I like how you call it the supergroup. I never thought of it like that way.
Yeah, it's like the biggest supergroup
ever. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's crazy to me that the whole project took about a month. From like when they start making phone calls till they actually like recorded, like how quickly this works. And I guess it's also when you're thinking about it, you got to remember that this is 1985. So it's not like, you know, everybody's not recording the thing in their home studio and they're sending over the digital file and putting it all together. So
no, this is like reel to reel tape.
Yeah.
Everybody had to like be on.
Yeah. So the AMAs that night, everybody starts coming over. Lionel Richie actually hosted the American Music Awards that year. So he had
I remember
on point.
Yeah.
And then they all come over and nobody gets paid for this at all. Like they all agree to do it for free.
Sure.
Well, one thing I forgot to mention, like the actual song is Quincy Jones produced it, but Lionel Richie and Michael Jackson wrote it.
Yes. I do remember that.
And so they all start getting in the room, and then it's super cool to watch the documentary of the making of, just to see how this all works and how they're trying to figure things out together. And, you know, I guess from a recording perspective, they like Michael Jackson laid down like his track at first, and you'll hear it when we play it. But then that was like what they would play in their headphones to kind of keep them going. That would be like the rhythm that they would hear.
Yeah. The scratch track.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Right.
And then they recorded all of the choruses first, and then they went back and they started doing all the solos. And Quincy Jones was the one who decided who got a solo and who didn't. And from what I heard, there wasn't any complaining about people who didn't get a solo.
It is so well done.
Yeah.
He has a magic ear.
And the really cool thing of watching the documentary was how everybody is in the room. They're fans of each other. Like they're asking each other for autographs.
Yes, on the sheet music. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're signing the sheet music for each other, or they're the sweatshirts they were wearing, they all signed them at the end. Mm. And it was just really cool. They also, all the artists signed a bunch of posters and they sold them to make charity. But and then at some point, like they decided, Quincy Jones realized like they needed to document this. So Life Magazine comes in to do a photo shoot, but they come in at 2:30 in the morning. So they had to take a break, and everybody was like getting their makeup on and making sure they look good. It's just, it's really interesting, man, how it all comes together.
I think it's great. They came right from the Music Awards, and, you know, it's like you're the starlet, you're getting all these awards, especially like Michael Jackson at the time, you know?
Right. It was, I mean, all of these artists, and that's a night where it's normally you're going to after parties and you're out all night and doing all this stuff.
Yeah, you're partying.
Yeah.
And they all just, I think it was a major part of music history. Now, we were talking about what was going on in Africa at the time.
There was a really bad famine in Ethiopia, and maybe it's short-sighted, but people thought, like, well, if we just spend a lot of money and buy food and send it there, that would be taken care of. But it wasn't as much. It wasn't entirely that it was just like a drought and the people were dying. There was like a civil war going on in Ethiopia, and it was being like a lot of the food and everything was being basically confiscated by these really bad dudes that was causing a lot of the issues.
Wow.
If I remember correctly, I know we talked about that at we did the Live 8 episode.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really just entirely like, oh, well, let's just throw a bunch of money at it and we'll fix it. But
yeah,
I really think they had the best intentions.
Oh, sure. I mean, you do something nice, people will take advantage of it. That's just how it goes.
At one point before the artists start recording, there is a part where Bob Geldof, he went to Ethiopia and he gives a speech to the artist of why they're doing this. And I have it. Let me pull it up on YouTube.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it. And this is like right before they start recording We Are the World. He was there.
Yeah, they're all in the room. And here you go.
We just came back from Ethiopia and he'd like to talk to you.
Oh, would I?
Well, maybe to put you in the mood of the song you're about to sing, which hopefully will save millions of lives, I think it's best to remember that the price of a life this year is a piece of plastic 7 inches wide with a hole in the middle. And that, I think, is an indictment of us. And I think what's happening in Africa is a crime of historical proportions. And the crime is that the Western world has got billions of tons of grain bursting in its silos, and we're not releasing it to people who are dying of hunger. And I don't know if we in particular can conceive of nothing, but nothing is not having a cardboard box to sleep under at minus 10 degrees. Nothing is not having any drink to get drunk on, not having water. And you walk into one of the corrugated iron huts and you see meningitis and malaria and typhoid buzzing around in the air, and you see dead bodies lying side by side with the live ones. And on a good day, you can only see 120 people die slowly in front of you. And in some of the camps, you see 15 bags of flour for 27,500 people. And it's that we're here for. And I don't want to bring anybody down, but maybe it's the best way of making what you really feel, why you're really here tonight, come out through this song. So thanks a lot, everybody, and let's hope it works.
Man, really powerful.
I am so proud of him as an Irishman.
I know you like him a lot.
And I like him a lot. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I was watching it on YouTube as we're playing it, and it's like the chorus, they're all on the risers, so they're all standing there, and he's got, you know, they're getting ready to start, and he just kind of ducks in and makes his speech, and he goes, and some of the artists start crying.
I didn't even know he was. It's been a while since I've seen that documentary. It's coming back to me now, but I don't even remember him being there. You know, like for him to be involved with We Are the World, yeah. I didn't know. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. And it's like, I don't know, man. It's like, I guess in the 80s, he really took it upon himself to try to make a difference between doing the Band-Aid charity, and then he helps with this a little bit, and then Live Aid. You know, yeah, dude was really trying.
He's a great guy. I mean.
And then at one point, too, I'm sorry, the artists weren't crying when that happened. Some of them, they later, there's a moment that Stevie Wonder brings in two women from Ethiopia to the session, and they speak to the artists about what it's like to live there, and that's when some of them start crying. Again, really, really powerful.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
Yeah,
hunger must. That's an awful thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's shit. I remember, I mean, I remember my parents having like this on, like recording it on a VHS tape when it came out and watching it.
It was a huge deal.
Yeah.
What did we say? You said it was on every channel simultaneously.
Yeah, there was like one time. I have something a little bit later where they, it was like 8,000 radio stations all played it at the same time. So really, really interesting. But it also wasn't all heavy, sad stuff. There's a part in the documentary, too, where everyone starts ragging on Harry Belafonte.
Yeah, I'm tired and I want to go home.
Yeah, they all start doing. I think I got that on the YouTube, too. Hang on. On the YouTube.
Oh.
It's super cool. They're all laughing. Harry Belafonte's got like his headset off because he's just laughing the whole time. Yeah. They're kind of breaking his stones.
I love him. He's great.
You know, it's interesting too, man. If you go to wearetheworld.org, the website is still up.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
The first image that kind of pops up is a in memorial of Harry Belafonte and everything that he did, since this was his idea. Like this whole song started with him. So. And he passed away this year, but it's just super cool watching how they all interacted with each other. And I guess we can get into that. We start talking about the song, but maybe before we start talking about the song, I looked up the story of, I got a story about two artists, one who is an artist who isn't here and one of an artist, maybe he was here and maybe he wasn't. So the first one was Prince. So where is Prince? Why is Prince not on this?
Yeah, I was wondering that. Go ahead.
So, and I was looking into it pretty hard, and they said there was always rumors that he was supposed to be there, but he never said before he passed away what the deal was. The rumor always was that the parts that Michael Jackson sang, he was going to trade off with Prince, but the dude Ken Cragen, the talent manager that was calling all these artists, he said Prince wouldn't have been able to do this. He's like, Prince was a control freak. He didn't take anything from anybody else. And then they're like, he would be the guy that he would play every one of his own instruments on the album because he wanted to control absolutely everything.
Absolutely. So,
there was that.
He was the man. He was the man.
Yeah. We'll get to him eventually on an episode too. The other rumor is that he just thought the song sucked and he wanted nothing to do with it.
I can see him being that. He's like, I ain't singing on this.
Yeah. Ow. Wendy Melvoin, she's the guitar player in The Revolution. I have a quote from her. She said, he felt like the song was horrible and he didn't want to be around all those motherfuckers.
I cannot see him being in We Are the World.
Yeah. So then I guess the night of the AMAs, he realized that it would be a bad look that Prince is such a big star that if he's at the AMAs and then he doesn't go to this, and if he shows up at like an after party, he's going to look like a jerk. So his manager started telling everybody at the AMAs, like, oh, Prince doesn't feel well. He's coming down with something. And then he just went out to a nightclub after the event anyway. And then it got even more publicity because two of his bodyguards got arrested for beating the shit out of a couple photographers for trying to take pictures of Prince.
Yes.
And he bailed him out of jail. Man. So he wasn't there. His AMA performance, dude, his AMA performance is on YouTube. Go look that up. Like he destroys it.
No doubt.
Awesome.
No doubt. The artist.
Yes. You said you saw him in concert, didn't you?
Oh, dude. I always say it was before he died. I would always say it was the best concert I've ever seen. And it was, man. It was like super hit after super hit. And he's one of the greatest performers I've ever seen. He dances. He plays guitar like a motherfucker. You know, he sings. He just, once you thought the show couldn't get topped, it just kept on getting bigger and bigger. Yeah. And his band was flawless.
Really? I've always heard like legendary, his control freakishness. I was never like a really, really big Prince fan. And then I saw him at the Super Bowl halftime.
Yeah.
When he was playing guitar, and I was like, whoa.
Oh,
just blew me away.
He's such you want to hear an inside story?
Yeah, please.
He played the Wells Fargo Center when I seen him. He played two nights in a row. Now, my good friend is the head electrician down at the stadium. He said after the first night, Prince, after the show, brought them all back on the stage and said, we're going to figure this shit out now, because they fucked the part up. And he brought them out after, and he kept the crew there. He kept everybody there.
Wow.
And he fucking said, we ain't going to do this again. And he just cut it out. And right after the fucking show, like, people are cleaning up, and he brought the whole band out again.
Wow.
He's like, tomorrow night, we're not fucking this up.
I guess that's a really high bar, man. You want to work with the best, right?
Yeah. I always loved that story. I thought that was awesome.
He did. So he's not on the song, but there was an album, which I didn't even know that there was a We Are the World album.
Yeah, I had it. I had it.
Okay. So he did a song for that called For the Tears in Your Eyes. And it's all like unreleased. It was like 9 or 10 unreleased tracks from artists that were on the album, like Trapped by Springsteen. I know the Warden loves that song. I love that song too, but that was on there.
Yeah. I remember Steve Perry had a song on there.
Yeah. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And then the other guy that isn't here, or maybe he is, and he is, or maybe he isn't, is Waylon Jennings. And
you told me about this. And I never knew he was even involved in this shit.
Right. So
I didn't see him there at all with these fucking dudes.
Waylon Jennings, the legendary outlaw country music fan, the legendary outlaw country music artist. And if you actually look at the credits for We Are the World, he's listed on there as being in the chorus. But
I never seen him in the video or anything.
He's not in the video. He's not in the documentary. He's not in the video. He's not in any of the pictures. So the story was at like 10:30 at night during the recording, Stevie Wonder has an idea, and he's like, oh, well, let's sing a couple of the lines in Swahili for Ethiopia. And I guess some of the artists, like, an argument breaks out, and a couple of the artists are like, no, I'm not doing this. Like, Ray Charles wrote, I have a quote from Ray Charles. He's like, Willie, what? Willie Mogu Mugu my ass. It's 3 o'clock in the goddamn morning. I can't even sing in English no more. And then
he's the best.
Ray was awesome. But then Waylon goes, like, no good old boy sings in Swahili. And I guess he left. He's just like, screw this. And some people say he came back in and he did the chorus. Some people say he didn't. So he might be on the chorus of it, and he might not be. We don't really know. But I'm with you, man. I can't imagine him, like, when they say leave your ego at the door. I just, no.
I can see him standing there with Dylan and Willie Nelson and being like, what the fuck is all this? What are all these fucking motherfuckers going doing?
Right.
Like, they're like these, you know, like, country hillbilly dudes mixing arms with these rock stars, you know?
Yeah, sure. I started listening to Waylon Jennings in the last like month or so, and I've been listening to him a lot. He's fantastic.
Don't let your children grow up to be cowboys.
Yeah. And I'd love to do an episode on the Highwaymen sometime, like Waylon,
sure,
and Johnny Cash and Kris Kristofferson, and yeah, just an awesome super group. But
yeah, we could do that.
So that would be like, yeah, I thought like them versus the Traveling Wilburys would be interesting. But
in a fight, who would win?
Probably
the Outlaws. Well, I don't know about Chris Kristofferson, but
although there is a new book about George Harrison came out. Remember when that wackadoodle broke into his house?
Sure. Yeah.
And it now says up. Like they said he was stabbed over 40 times. George Harrison was in that fight. You know, I knew he was injured. I didn't know it was like that.
Yeah. George Harrison kind of fucked him up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And his kid came running in and all this other stuff. They were afraid he was going to die. He was going to bleed out because he was getting stabbed so much. But anyway, so they cut the song, and then when it comes out, the radio play. So August 5th, I'm sorry, in the radio play, April 5th, 1985, there's over 8,000 radio stations around the world all played the song at the same time at 10:50 in the morning Eastern Standard Time. Yeah, the song was already – it had been out for about a month, but I guess that whole idea started like two radio stations in like Rome, Georgia just happened to be playing it at the same time. And I guess people started calling in like, hey, you guys were playing the song. And it's weird. And they thought it was funny. So they were like, let's do it again, but let's get more radio stations. And it just kind of snowballed into somebody going, let's make it like a global thing.
And I kind of remember something in grammar school.
I do too.
Something to do with like everybody listening to it at once.
And I was reading about that, and they said like they did it the following year as well as like an event. But they said there was like people would get together in like one place to hear it when they played it. And I kind of remember that as well. I mean, I was 9 years old when this came out, but
oh yeah.
And one other thing I thought was interesting. Yeah. So then, you know, that company Muzak, they play like music in like offices and stuff like that. They played it as well. And it was only the second time that they ever played a human voice. The first time was they announced that the hostages in Iran were released in like 1980. And they said like Muzak reached about 80 million Americans every day through their like, and the music went to 110 offices, shops, and factories around the country. So it like huge. Wow. I just thought that was really cool that they decided to play it too.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it was huge. It was huge.
And then they followed it up next year with, I didn't know this either. Remember Hands Across America?
Sure. Oh yeah. I remember we went to it. My family went to it down at Penn's Landing in Philadelphia. Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, I remember
The Hooters played.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Another local band. I remember going outside like my elementary school, and we all joined hands, and I kind of thought it was going to be like a line of people trying to go around the world as far as anybody can see. I guess I had some misconceptions of what that was actually going to be, but I never knew that that was also from the USA for Africa organization. That was like the next thing they tried to do.
The Hands Across America song wasn't even close as being good as We Are the World.
No, no. And I don't think it had the same impact like
no way
in terms of no money way. And what it did for Africa no and way. Everything else, but so
I think everybody was like another cause, something else. It was everybody's burned out by then.
Yeah. All right. So maybe we can just start talking about the artists that appear.
There's so many.
Yeah, I have a really long list here.
Yeah, let's just who do we got? Like, start naming some more. We'll talk about them.
All right. So obviously conducted by Quincy Jones. We mentioned that, but and talk about the soloist and the order of appearance. And you know, when they say a solo, I mean, it's like some of these guys, they sang one line and then they handed it off.
There's so many of them, you know, that was cool.
And it opens with Lionel Richie because it's his song. And you know, he also, I said Quincy Jones picked who sang the solos. Quincy also, Lionel Richie also had an input in that too. So he opens it, you know, and I think everybody, that's the what I remember. As soon as I hear that, I'm like, that's We Are the World.
And that's the only part he sings.
I think so, yeah.
And he wrote the song. And but he opens it up. I mean, that's an iconic part he sings.
Sure. You know? Stevie Wonder comes in. Stevie Wonder's in a couple spots. Paul Simon. So Lionel opens it. Stevie Wonder, Paul Simon, Kenny Rogers, James Ingram, Tina Turner, Billy Joel, Michael Jackson, Diana Ross, Diane Warwick, Willie Nelson, Al Jarreau, Springsteen, Kenny Loggins, Steve Perry, Daryl Hall, Huey Lewis, Cyndi Lauper, Kim Carnes, Bob Dylan, and Ray Charles. That's all the solo people.
Wow.
And it's like, I don't know, the song's what? I got it open on Spotify. The song's about 7 minutes long. Yeah, it's 7 minutes and 10 seconds. So you got all those artists grabbing a couple of lines, and some of them are like paired up with each other. Oh, some of the so like the making of documentary, like some of those guys that they're working together. So they recorded all the chorus and then they were doing the solos. And it was like it felt like 15 minutes of the documentary was just them, Bob Dylan, trying over and over and over again to hit his line. I almost felt bad for him at some point because some of the artists are like they're laying on the bleachers like they're so tired.
You ever see like that? It would be like on Facebook or Instagram, they would show the video of Dylan standing there singing the chorus and he's like looking around like,
yeah,
he's like has no idea what the fuck's going on.
And they like when he finally gets it, they all start cheering like, Bob, you did it. And I was like, but what is good Bob versus bad Bob sound like? He sounds like Kermit the Frog.
I don't know. I love Dylan. I think he nails it. They totally get his personality right on it. I think that's a big deal of the recording of this is to get these artists' personality really fast.
Yeah. There's a couple in here that I think really do that. Like Dionne Warwick. I know we broke her stones a lot.
She can sing though, dude.
She brings it.
Yeah. She does that. Send me your heart part.
Yeah. Yeah. She does a great job. Springsteen totally overdoes it. He just
I think Quincy made him like do that fucking "We Are the World."
Yeah, it's so over the top.
He wanted that Jersey like Springsteen. Definitely, you know who it is right away.
I hadn't watched this in so long, and in my head, I was like, I totally thought he was wearing like the bandana, and it was like 80s Springsteen, like the jean jacket with the sleeves ripped off, and that's not what he is, but yeah, he totally, and I in my head, I was like, there was like spit flying out of his mouth, and
he's passionate.
Yeah, he totally, I think he overdoes it.
He's thinking about all those poor children, man.
I guess so. And this is a great fit for him because he does so much charity stuff too.
Yeah, this is just a small moment in his charity work that he's done.
Sure. Another artist I thought that really got after it was Cyndi Lauper.
She kills it. I was always wondering about her part, especially at that end when she's singing with Huey Lewis and they're all chorus and she goes, yeah, 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 yeah. Who did that? Did she improv that or did Quincy tell her to do that shit?
So the documentary that I watched, they were, and I guess it was, I forget what, it was like a TV special about the making of it from the 80s. And it was Huey Lewis, Cyndi Lauper, and Kim Carnes who sang Betty Davis Eyes. We were talking about last week.
I was wondering who she was.
Yeah.
I never knew who she was.
You're kind of like, what the hell is she doing here?
I never knew who she was.
Yeah.
Until right now.
So and I guess the three of them were singing through it and they're struggling. Some of the rockers were struggling because they weren't singing in the same pitch, right? Like Springsteen and Huey Lewis and Steve Perry, they got big like rock and roll voices. So it doesn't always fit. But
yeah,
I guess Huey and Cyndi and Kim kept doing that part over and over and over again. And I think one of them suggests like, hey, why don't you try picking up that? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like lead us into the chorus with it.
And she can. Her voice is amazing.
Yeah. And that was something they just tried over and over and over and over and over until they finally just nailed. Like at one point, she's like, all her jewelry's making noise in the microphone. Yes. So you got to take her earrings off.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is like straight out of the 80s. Girls just want to have fun video. You know, she's got the hair and all the jewelry on.
It just came from, the award ceremony. Of course, she's all like, she's Cyndi Lauper. She was awesome.
And some of the artists I barely even remember. Like I know Billy Joel's on there and Paul Simon, but I thought they were kind
of. They have very small part. Billy Joel has a very small part. It's forgettable,
Oh, and also another guy who brings it is Ray Charles. And we just captured that when we came out. Yeah. When we came out of the monologue, wanted to play the part of Ray Charles because he just like starts going like, woo. And you watch the video. The video, he's doing that Ray Charles, when he's stomping back and forth. And he
was the greatest.
Some of those guys had to go back into the studio afterwards and re-record some parts. Sure. And he was just there's showing him in the studio and he's just like, just, you feel it when you watch that, just the way he's getting into it. It's super cool.
He had so much passion. That was what made his music awesome. Anybody could sing a song, but the way he did it and his passion. I think his voice made a big part of We Are the World. Like he leads it at the end.
I think so too. And he's a guy that can play, he can sing almost anything, right? He did anything. Gospel music, and he was like doing some rock and stuff and soul. And he just, his voice could just fit into anything. He was awesome. So talented.
So talented.
And then the chorus is Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Okay.
How the fuck does he get in there?
I think he was supposed to represent like the movie industry is a part of this.
Or like, I don't know. I just always remember seeing him in the video. Even like, you know, as a kid, I was like, what the hell is Dan Aykroyd doing there?
Well, that's, you just said that too. That's a good point, because there was no internet when this came out. So like I remember watching that video and you're trying to point out who everybody is when they're singing. Yeah. You're like, oh, I know that. And
because
you
he's know, standing there and he has like a mug in his hand.
Yeah.
And he has his glasses on. Just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And like, why him out of like, you know, like, you know, like Paul Newman could have been there.
Right.
Or like, right. Like friggin' Marlon Brando.
Right. You know? Sean like, Connery. We are the world.
We are the world, bastard.
So he's in the chorus, Harry Belafonte, which is also pretty interesting. Like, so this was kind of his idea, and he doesn't have a solo.
Oh, wow. He's
I didn't think humble, about that until just now.
He's a humble, humble guy, dude.
Yeah. Lindsey Buckingham from Fleetwood Mac is in the chorus. I didn't realize.
Oh, wow.
Everybody else, some Huey Lewis in the News, Sheila the E, news. Bob Geldof is in the, he's in the choir.
Okay.
Most of the other Jackson 5, maybe Waylon Jennings, Bette Midler.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I saw her in there somewhere with like, she had like red hair, and like when I was watching the film, I was like, is that Bette Midler?
She looked way different. I mean, she always had different style. But in the 80s, she really like overdid it. She looked like Cyndi Lauper.
yeah, she did. Her hair was at that level. John Oates was in there, and I guess Daryl Hall got the good part, and Oates didn't.
Poor Oates. Always, he's like Wham. He's like the other guy in Wham.
The other guy in Wham. Jeffrey Osborne, all three of the Pointer Sisters, and then Smokey was in the chorus as well. Another dude is like, holy crap, man. You don't have a place for Smokey.
Yeah. Well, dude, how do you like decide who's going to sing on what part?
Right.
They sit around for like weeks and like, all right, they like blueprint it out so they don't waste any time. Like, all right, we go with Springsteen will sound awesome doing this part right here. And Stevie's going to sing in this part right here. You know, I'm sure they had it kind of, they weren't like experimenting too much in the process of recording the song because there was no time for that shit.
But you still got to figure out like what voices can you pair up, because some of the songs, the way they hand off the lines, like Paul Simon to Kenny Rogers, like Paul sings his line and then Kenny comes in like the last like three words of Paul Simon's line. And then Paul stops and Kenny Rogers picks it up. And even the way they recorded this, like they're in that room and they're like, they have to time it how they walk up to the mic, they lean into the mic and then they lean back. And it was just super cool to see
that's
it all.
Professional,
how it worked.
That's professionalism. That's two iconic recording stars. They know what they're doing. They've done it billions of times. They know how it works.
Right. But they're all doing it and they're handing off to each other.
Effortlessly.
Like Tina Turner just hands it over to Billy Joel and Billy Joel hands it off, I think, to Diana Ross. And it's just like, and they're nailing it.
And it's all natural. It just sounds so clean. Is there like a list of people that they asked and they said, no, we're not coming?
The only one I saw was Prince.
Hmm.
That was the only one that I came across of. And then, apparently Prince then, when he didn't want to do the song, he offered to play guitar. And then Quincy Jones was like, I don't need a fucking guitar player. I need Prince the singer.
I remember watching an award show. We'll go into it later, but they did an anniversary for USA for Africa. And it was on the American Music Awards. And Quincy Jones got like a bunch of guys up there, stars. And Prince is up there and they're singing We Are the World, and Prince has a lollipop in his mouth and everybody's singing and he's just sucking on this fucking lollipop, and Quincy Jones fucking pulls it right out of his fucking mouth It's just if you ever get a chance to watch it, maybe it's on YouTube. It's fucking unbelievable.
I'll have to check it out. I was just trying to think, like, who else wasn't there? I was like Sting wasn't there.
Yeah. Okay.
I can't think of who else. I'm just trying to think in my, just racking my brain, like, who else would. Yeah, I was just trying to see if there was like a list of artists who were invited who didn't, but I don't see anything. But I'm sure there was others.
Sure it was. So. Oh yeah, I mean Madonna wasn't there.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. Why wasn't Madonna?
Like, you know, they probably didn't want her ass there.
Why wasn't Madonna included at We Are the World? Madonna wasn't. I'm on popculturereference.com. Madonna has never spoken on the record about the snub, so a lot of this is just supposition. Madonna was invited to participate. She was invited by Michael Jackson, but she was on the road doing the Virgin Tour at the time and had something else to do.
Okay.
Yeah, whereas, I mean, like, man, like Freddie Mercury, imagine him if he came in and did this. Like, Steve Perry can friggin' sing.
Oh, yeah. But my question is, where's Boy George in all this?
Boy George is another good one.
You know,
if the internet knows. So Boy George was in the Do You Know It's Christmas Time?
Yes, that's right.
But, you know, I guess he's not. Okay.
Dionne Warwick is in this song.
Yeah.
Elton John's in this song?
Elton John is not in this song.
Okay.
I think I said his name earlier, but that was incorrect. Billy Joel was, not Elton John.
Okay.
So Elton John's another one. Like,
because remember Elton John did that great song with Stevie and Gladys and Dionne Warwick? That's what Friends Are For?
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, I don't like that song, but it's okay. I'm not a big Dionne Warwick fan, but she's awesome in this.
She's a psychic network. She's going to play the lottery.
Yeah, man. So I guess we kind of talked about, you know, who's on it and how we got there and all this other stuff. We should probably play the song. So maybe it's a good point. Let's take a break and then we'll come back and let's come out of the commercial break and we'll just play the entire song and then we'll just pick up with some other thoughts.
Sounds great.
Awesome. All right, guys. Dude. All right. We'll be back.
Stick around, folks.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by McCusker's Tavern at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia. There's something for everyone on the beer list and the jukebox at McCusker's. It's minutes from the sports stadiums in Philly, making it a great place to stop by for a few drinks before or after a concert or a game. Come see for yourself why everyone from Philadelphia Magazine to Playboy has called it one of the best dive bars in the city. Visit them at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia or on Facebook. That's McCusker's Tavern.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is proud to be sponsored by Boldfoot Socks. Boldfoot Socks is a family-owned American business that makes great socks in a variety of styles, and every pair is made in America from materials grown in America. And on top of that, they're a veteran-owned business that donates 5% of their proceeds to veteran charities. And while I'm thinking about it, Veterans Day passed in the time between this episode and our last one. So this is a great opportunity just to say thank you to Josh and the team over at Boldfoot Socks, as well as all of the veterans that are out there listening to us. So if you're looking for a great pair of socks, head on over to boldfoot.com. Tell them the warden sent you. It's boldfoot.com.
The warden.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
right, we're back from the commercial break. Thanks so much for sticking with us.
Man.
The first full song we've ever played on the show.
I love how Ray Charles is at the end of that. Just rocks it.
Yeah.
You know.
James Ingram at the end of that, too.
Yes.
Gets after it, too.
Yes. He has a big part there. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'd forgotten how much Stevie Wonder and Springsteen were
they really
duetting, too.
Oh, yeah. They really worked well together. You know, Quincy Jones is an amazing talent. You know, like how he like put all those in order. And I think maybe they won like a Grammy that year or the next year they won a Grammy.
Yeah, and it was it was nominated for a couple Grammys. I believe it won some Grammys. It was like the VMA award, so it won four awards. It was Record of the Year, Song of the Year, Best Pop Performance by a Duo or Group, and Best Music Video Short Form. And then it got a couple awards at the MTV Music Awards for the Best Group Video and Viewer's Choice. It's kind of hard not to, right? Like they're trying to raise all the millions of dollars for charity and all this, all these people. Phil Collins wasn't here.
Yeah, you're right. British. Yeah, there was no British. There was no British there at all.
That's true. I guess because he wanted to do like an American counter to.
There you go. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is the counter to Band-Aid. So that's probably why like Sting and Boy George, all those guys weren't there.
Oh. Yeah, there's no Beatles.
Yeah.
There's no Rolling Stones.
Yeah, that's true. You know, yeah, that had to be what it was.
There's no Who. You know, all these huge, huge bands.
Yeah.
We're not involved.
There's not a lot of rockers on here.
It was a pop thing. Quincy Jones, you know, he's a pop guy, you know.
Yeah.
Or not pop, but, you know.
Right. More melodic kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, like said, Springsteen's the rocker. Steve Perry can freaking sing, man.
Oh, it's a shame he can't do it anymore.
Even, I mean, that the little trio, we already talking about it, like Huey Lewis, Cyndi Lauper, and Kim Carnes. Like,
they kill it.
Right. And Huey Lewis has such a powerful voice, and Cyndi Lauper's voice is so high that it just works so well together. You're right. Like Quincy Jones and if it was Lionel Richie, like the decision to put them together is just like, it's so cool. And it's only 20 seconds, but it sounds awesome.
Everybody wants to talk shit on like Huey Lewis and shit like that. Like, dude, he was so big. He was in We Are the World, you know, like the dude had something going for him. He was in fucking We Are the World, you know?
Also, a potential show is like, is he the most underrated rock and roller from the 80s or something?
Dude, I love me Huey Lewis in the News.
I remember you mentioning that before. And he's again, man, that he sounds like effortless when he sings. And he's had this huge voice.
Yeah. I wish he'd come toward a little bit more. I'd definitely go check him out.
I think he's deaf or he retired from recording, I think, because of like hearing loss. But
a friend of mine sat in with him a few years ago and he said he was a fucking awesome guy.
That's cool. Yeah, he seems like a dude I would want to like. And he canceled his tour because he has severe hearing loss. And then it comes with that was like vertigo and all kinds of other stuff going on. So that's a shame. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Meniere's disease. He said he can't hear well enough to even sing. So he was on the road in 2018 and he canceled his tour and basically retired. That's a bummer, but we still have his performance in We Are the World. So that was cool. I've listened, I don't know, I probably listened to it like five times in the last 2 weeks. Just,
yeah.
It seems like every time a little nugget, something else I hear.
Yeah, the words are, you know, I couldn't help think about The Simpsons when Bart fell down the hole.
Yes.
And that's where Sting was. Remember, we were trying, oh, maybe Sting would. No, Sting was there for Bart Simpson.
And I had sent you the one, Married Children did a parody of it. They did Old Aid.
Yeah.
They did a parody of it when Al is Axel Bundy and he had like Isaac, was it Isaac Hayes? No. It was Richie Havens and the guy from Loving Spoonful and one of the guys from Herman's Hermits and all these guys singing. It was hysterical. But
you love that show.
I do. I still make pop references to it all the time. But so, yeah, man, I guess that's We Are the World. It's
We Are the Children.
I didn't know that the charity was still around. And then you said, like, yeah, they're still out there collecting money. So, you know, if you feel that that's something you want to be a part of, you can go on there. There's all kinds of stuff about, like, the song and their what they're trying to do and how much money they've raised year to date. And there's a lot of cool stuff. I spent some time on there this weekend just kind of reading up on what they're doing.
It's still a great cause, you know, if you
sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we've done a couple shows now where we did Live Aid and just talking about things, trying to give back and make the world a difference. And I know you and I both believe that music can do that music can make a difference.
There are so other many things like We Are the World that happened. Do you remember the metal world had hearing aid?
No, I don't remember that at all.
Dude, look it up right now. Look all up right, hearing aid.
Hearing Aid, a charity record recorded by 40 heavy metal musicians and released in 1986. Organized by Ronnie James Dio, raised $3 million for famine relief in Africa. How have I never fucking heard this?
Really?
It was compilation album, Hearing Aid, an all-star album for famine relief. Includes.
Oh, God. Yeah, dude.
What? Oh, it's like a whole album. It's not just one song.
Well, the one song was like a We Are the World thing. And
okay.
It's fucking killer, man. For like the everybody's on that shit. Like Don Dokken, all those hair band dudes are fucking there. Even the guys from Spinal Tap are there.
The project included contributions from Ted Nugent, Wingy, Malmsteen, Dio, Judas Priest, Maiden, Quiet Riot, Dokken Crew, Twisted Sister, Queenstrike, Blue Oyster Cult, Vanilla Fudge, Y&T, Rough Cut, Journey, Wasp, and Night Ranger, and Spinal Tap. What? How have I never heard of this?
Dude, is there a music clip we can... I think on YouTube, you could definitely find it on YouTube.
There's a song called Stars. Let's play a little bit of this.
I think we get away with playing the whole thing.
I don't know how the hell I'm so into music. Dude. And I listened to almost all those artists. I've never heard of this before. That was fucking great.
Young Padawan, I will show you the way.
And as it was playing, because that was just 7 minutes long, I was reading something about, like, so they're going to reissue this in 2023.
Oh, yeah.
Roddy Dio's wife wants to release it and raise money for like the cancer charity that they set up for Ronnie James Dio. After he passed away. And I was reading about, like, Jimmy Page was supposed to sing on this or was supposed to perform on this. And he was like, I'll record something for it after Live Aid before I split. They said they actually, but he's like, I'll only record it in Philadelphia. And they said the guys all, like, they brought in all this crap and they rented a studio to record it. And he just didn't show up.
What a jerk off.
They said Brian May was supposed to do this, and he bailed out. And they were just showing, like, I don't know what I'm reading. Neil Schoen was there. He played some guitar. And in the downtime, he was mocking Springsteen and We Are the World, over singing everything. And these guys, they said they called Geldorf. They went to that, the talent manager who organized We Are the World, and were at, like, picking his brain, like, how did you pull this together? And, they wanted to do this because it was right after Dee Snider was doing the PMRC hearings of Congress. And they were kind of like, they wanted to be like, no, man, rock and roll, heavy metal can do some good too. This is awesome, dude. I would have done the whole show over this instead of
we could have.
Shit, man. We gotta, maybe that's our next show, is like when heavy metal struck back. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
I always knew about it, and I was going to add on to the show. So.
That's fantastic, man. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. That was super cool. And the video was awesome too.
Oh, go check the video out. It's so funny. Like that, like, not Don Dokken. He's the singer. Lynch is like playing. Yeah. He's got like this half shirt on. It's the style of clothing these heavy metal guys are wearing, and the hairstyles and the faces they're making as they're singing. Like, Kevin LeBrow from Quiet Riot's like right in the front row of the chorus, and he's making this crazy look in his eye with
a
Blackie Lawless is standing next to him doing the same thing, like making like kill you eyes.
They said they only raised like $1.5 million, but they said they spent it and they bought some farm machinery that they shipped over to Africa. That's awesome, dude. I'm really glad you just introduced me to that. That's super cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
I always love that. Absolutely.
I'll have to do some more research on that and do some more reading. I said there's a couple articles where they were interviewing everybody. Sound like just a bunch of the artists were sitting in a room doing like interviews or talking about it. So I'll send those over to you. That was very cool.
Yeah, man.
All right. Well, look at that. All right, dude. Well, let's move on to the back end of the show. Hang on. All right. So I got two pieces of music news. The first one is the Sammy Hagar tour. And I want to mention this because we were all talking about it this week on Facebook.
Yes.
So Hagar is going on tour with Joe Satriani, Michael Anthony, and Jason Bonham. And they said that they're going to play some Van Halen songs. So I'm interested to go see that. I know the Blue Meanie, who's a fan of the show, is an enormous Van Halen fan. He already got his tickets. I think he got the pre-sale today.
They're not coming to Philly.
Yeah, they're playing in Homedale, New Jersey. So
Homedale?
That's not too far.
I'll drive to Homedale.
Yeah, that's not too far from me. So it's like a half hour.
It looks like I'm
crashing
at your house, cuz.
There you go, man. Yeah, dude, that might be on my list. I'll have to see what my schedule's
going
to be like in the summer.
We're going to that. We're going to that.
Yeah, we might need to.
Yeah.
And it's not the first time those guys all work together. So Hagar, Satriani, Michael Anthony, and Chad Smith from the Chili Peppers were in a band called Chickenfoot, which was great. They put out a couple albums. It was really good.
I didn't think it was that great.
I enjoyed it. Really? You didn't like it?
I just didn't think Satriani was good for songwriting.
Okay.
Like, he's great. He's going to do great on the Van Halen songs. It's going to be fucking amazing.
Okay.
But when Chickenfoot came around, it was just a little cheesy for me.
Okay. You know? I didn't see them in concert. I had the albums. And I enjoyed it, but okay. It was also whenever those came out 20 years ago, 15 years ago. It's been a long time since I listened to it. And then Hagar, Michael Anthony, Jason Bonham, and Vic Johnson were in a band called The Circle. So it's kind of like they're taking the best of both worlds. So
awesome.
And Satriani is one of those, like, you know.
Yeah, I've seen him.
Elite guitar players.
Yeah, him and like Steve Vai.
Yeah, right.
Actually, this weekend, I am going to go see Chicago play in Atlantic City.
Okay.
And Steve Vai is playing guitar for them right now.
That is weird, man. I'm curious to hear how that goes.
Well, if you listen to the original Chicago stuff, their first album is called Chicago Transit Authority. That was the name of the band. And then they changed their name to Chicago. But they had this huge guitar sound that they were... This guitar was so big, it was like Jimi Hendrix's favorite guitar player at the time.
Hmm.
So it was before the Peter Cetera Chicago is before all that bullshit. So I think they're going to play all the rock and stuff.
All right, cool. Well, enjoy, man. That's a good time. And then the last one, and I'm only putting this in here to troll Kate Bush, but the last one, man. So the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame held their induction for the class of 2023 on November 3rd. And Kate Bush was apparently too important to bother showing up. So most of the other artists.
Who's a snotty bitch?
All right. Most of the other artists were there. She was not. I actually watched her entire induction, even though she couldn't bother being there. But I watched it all. It was like 15 minutes. Yeah, so I watched the whole thing. Outkast Big Boy inducted Kate Bush into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And dude, he was talking a lot about like, she's incredibly hip hop because she was like, I'll do everything on my own terms and nobody's going to control my messaging and all this other kind of stuff. And then they showed a video and it was like, it was Elton John, Gilmore, Peter Gabriel, St. Vincent, and that artist, Churches. They were all talking about her. And then it ended with St. Vincent covered that Running Up a Hill, which it wasn't okay. It wasn't great.
I don't like that St. Vincent. Everybody goes nuts over her.
I as a Kate Bush song, that's not as terrible as some of her other stuff, that song, but I still don't like it. And I just thought it was funny that, you know, she couldn't be bothered to show up to her own induction ceremony.
I personally don't think she likes Americans.
Probably not. She probably heard our show and wants something to do with us.
I hope she does hear our show. We're doing something right.
I'm sure all the crazy cat people, we're still getting, well, with them getting inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for second thoughts, there was a whole bunch of people still complaining to us. Actually, I have them here on my other laptop. So, you know what? Just more people, just crazy cat people complaining about us.
Really? I want to hear, it's been a while since I've seen any or hear any. I love hate mail. Hate mail makes me smile, especially when they call us like Beavis and Butthead.
All right, let me move my other computer here. I got all my YouTube notes. So most of the comments that we got on YouTube over the last couple of days were 10400 beats said, oof, you two incels, you're so cringe. And to that guy, I just said, incel, I'm almost 50, I'm married, and I have 3 kids. You have no idea what that word means. But thanks for proving that Kate Bush fans are the most bitter group of people going. How many cats do you have? And never responded. Rick AHL 5444 said, we love her poetry, her voice, her compositions. Her voice becomes much better once she matured and started singing in a lower register. I said, okay, man, I appreciate
it. No, I take that. Absolutely.
I get it. She had incredible influence on like live performances and artists that came after her. We don't debate that. We just don't like her.
No, I think she's very sophisticated sound. You know, absolutely.
And then one other person, MAPNDO 2337 said, "I love Kate Bush, but it should have been Sinead O'Connor and most definitely Susie Sue and the Banshees first." I don't know about that, but
Susie Sue. I always wanted to meet her. Oh, well, meet me afterwards.
Afterwards. Oh, you dirty bastard. You're all too. And then a lot of people also commenting like that the Spinners should have been in. There were several people like Lily Williams, CD2VN. Yes, congratulations to the Spinners, long after due. Perpy 34, congratulations to the Spinners. You guys deserve it all the years that you contributed to wonderful music. So it was cool to see them get into.
About Lee Ray, is that his name who got
inducted? Oh, Link Ray.
Rumble got inducted. What a great
did you
song
see that was like Jimmy Page came out and played that at the induction ceremony.
I heard
it was like the first time he's played a guitar like on stage or in public in like 12 years.
But I'll see it when it comes on HBO.
We had one other comment, some random user OJ7B and whatever. Kate Bush is only a cult following in the USA. Does that mean that Roxy Music, T-Rex, or Kraftwerk shouldn't be in the hall due to being cult bands in the United States? They're all mainstream in Europe, so is Kate Bush. Does that mean Joy Division and New Order shouldn't be in once they get inducted? The majority of people in America who know them are college students, similar to Kate's fan base here. Every British child can name a song by her. Stop being so fucking American and open your mind up.
Oi, oi. Thank you.
Yeah, Dan, thanks. Whatever. Miserable. Oi. So stop being so fucking American, you Americans.
We can't help it. USA all the way.
Right. And play the Hulk Hogan, I Am a Real American song. So
you think we're bad? You should see real motherfuckers.
Right. Like when my one of my colleagues from England comes over here and I pick him up from the I drive him to the office from the hotel and he gets in my pickup truck. He's like, oh, is this where you put your guns, like, or in the glove box or the center console? He's like, is this where you put your Budweiser? And
so, that's pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just like, Americans drive these enormous cars. We also got an email from somebody about last week's show with the warden.
The warden?
So, yeah. So, hi.
I'm the warden.
Ta-da. Says, hello, my name is John Tex. I live in Wisconsin, even though you would think with a name like mine, I would live in Texas. I've been listening to your show for a few months and had no idea who this character you kept talking about called the warden was or why he was important. I thought it was just an inside joke. I heard him on your show last week, and then I listened to the MDV Unplugged episode after you said he was on that. I just want to drop you an email and say I liked having him on, and it was obvious that he's a friend of yours. P.S. Will you send me a sticker if I say that Kate Bush sucks? Even if you don't, Kate Bush sucks. Yours in rock and roll, John Tex, not from Texas. So
Thanks, brother.
I wrote him back. I said, hey, man, give me your email or give me your address. We'll mail you a couple stickers. Perfect for the holidays. And yes, really appreciate it.
Yeah, perfect for the holidays. One size fits all.
Absolutely. And if anybody out listening wants some, even if the Kate Bush fans, you guys want some stickers, you can always reach out to us through our website or social media. We'd be happy to mail you some. So, all right, man, the electric chair. You had a good suggestion. Let me pull it up first. One thing we didn't talk about in the arc of the story about We Are the World is the sequel to We Are the World. And in 2010, there was a group of artists called Artists for Haiti. They recorded We Are the World 25. And let me pull up real quick. I have the list of artists, but this was still produced by Quincy Jones and Lionel Richie was involved. And it also was involved. Wyclef was involved because he's Haitian. And they purposefully did not invite any of the artists who were involved in the first one. The only person who appears on both is Michael Jackson. So they used the clips of Michael Jackson from the first We Are the World and they spliced it in. They uses a shit ton of auto-tune.
Ugh.
It's pretty bad. I saw
it is.
Saturday Night Live made a parody of it, and they said they needed to make a third We Are the World to raise awareness for how terrible this one is, which I thought was funny. And then Lionel Richie also wanted to make a third version during the COVID pandemic, but that never happened.
Just let it leave it alone.
Yeah, but there is way more artists on this than there are on the other one. So I'm just looking at the list. So the soloists, there's probably 40 soloists. I'll just a couple of them. Bieber, and I'm skipping these some around. Josh Groban, Tony Bennett, Mary J. Blige, Tony Braxton, Janet Jackson, Barbara Streisand, Miley Cyrus, Enrique Iglesias, Wyclef, Adam Levine, Pink, Celine Dion, Usher, Fergie, T.I., T-Pain.
All the T's are there.
The Chorus, I'm just looking down the list of people I recognize. El DeBarge, Brandy, The Zac Brown Band, Jeff Bridges, Natalie Cole, Harry Connick Jr., Faith Evans, John Legend, Randy Jackson, Bobby McFerrin, Gladys Knight, Jason Mraz, Maya, Nicole Richie, Trey Songz, Jordan Sparks, Robin Thicke.
Oh, he's Lana Richie's kid. That's right.
Yeah. Rob Thomas, Vince Vaughn, Ann Wilson, Brian Wilson, and Nancy Wilson. This thing has got so much auto-tune on it. And and I forgot. There's also there's a rap halfway through it. And the rap is LL Cool J, Will.i.am, Snoop Dogg, Nipsey Hussle, Busta, Swizz Beatz, Kanye, and two other, Iaz and Man. I was listening to this, and I heard it when I was getting to work in the morning, and I sent it to you. And I'm like, have you ever heard this? And then after I sent it, I was still listening to it, and the rap came on, and I was like, oh, my God. I started laughing hysterically, and I messaged you again. I was like, holy shit, listen to this until 5. Don't turn it off. Listen to it for 5 minutes. Maybe let's play like maybe 45 seconds of it, and then I'll skip ahead to the 5 minute, the rap, and then we'll sentence it to death. But we're going to take a little bit of a different approach here, but check this out.
There comes a time when we hit a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying.
Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all.
We can't go on pretending day by day.
I hate that drum beat in the back.
Somehow will soon
yeah,
make a change.
It's so
stupid. That's the way it is.
We'll play. Let's get up to the chorus. Let's hear this part too.
Here's Michael.
Shitbag of the week.
Yeah. All right. So there's that. And then let me get up to the hip hop part. And it just drops. I want to get a little bit of a lead up into it because it just drops into it from out of nowhere. It's like I want to hear it.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Roadrunner Acme Anvil falls out of the song on your head here.
We all need somebody that we can lean on. When you wake up, look around and see that your dream's gone. When the earthquakes will help you make it through the storm. When the floor breaks, a magic carpet to stand on. We are the world united by love so strong. When the radio isn't on, you can hear the songs. A guiding light on the dark road you're walking on. A signpost to find the dreams you thought was gone. Someone to help you move the obstacles you stumbled on. Someone to help you rebuild after the rubble's gone. We are the world connected by a common bond. Love, the whole planet singing along.
These sentences
that was perfectly mixed in there, dude.
Right, it sounds like it could have been part of the song.
You dropped that like bass.
That was not good, man. That, and I some of those artists, man, like I think Wyclef is incredibly talented.
Oh, yeah.
I like him a lot. I was like, man, I don't know what the hell was going on
he
here.
He did get the biggest names of the time at that time though.
Sure. And you it's know? Just
especially
it's too
Streisand.
Much.
Yeah.
Right. Man. Right. I mean, Josh Groban, I don't like his music, but I mean, the dude can sing.
Yeah.
Got an incredible voice. It just, but it's too much, man. And you said the beat just,
drum and bass, whatever they're trying to do.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Come and on.
It's just so much autotune on it. So when did this come out? So this came out in 2010. So Quincy Jones was like in his 70s when he did this. So I don't know. All right.
People
well,
just
that
gotta
about
leave. People gotta leave shit alone, man. Just
yeah.
Leave shit alone.
Yeah, and he said they played it during the opening of the Winter Olympics that year, and it was, I guess it was a big deal. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. It's not good. But.
Nope.
So that'll do it for episode number 73. Thanks so much for this look back on We Are the World. And if you want to go learn more about USA for Africa, you can go to usaforafrica.org. I said there's all kinds of cool stuff on there. We would love it if you follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Check us out on Facebook or Twitter. Visit our website or drop us an email at show@prisonersofrockandroll.com. There's links to all that stuff down in the show notes, as well as a map to McCusker's Tavern. You know what, dude? Second thoughts, man. We can talk about the bar.
Oh, well, you know, the party was great.
Yeah.
You know. Clowns who left me, clowns that are right, you know.
Yeah, I said it was, you know, we showed
mobbed,
up. The bar was really jumping.
It was mobbed. It was so mobbed, I had to leave.
Yeah, yeah. I think you left around the same time I did.
I was like, I got to go early. I wasn't working at all, so I wasn't no help at all. So I was like, dude, I got to leave. Like,
yeah.
I was dodging bullets like the whole time. Like, oh, I don't want to talk to this person. I don't want to talk to this person. Whatever. I just sat next to you the whole time. I stood next to you the whole time.
Because everybody comes over to see the warden instead of you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The warden was there. My wife was there.
My friends, the Coons, were there. And Barb was happy to meet you. That she always
listens to our
show.
I talked to her for a couple minutes and it was very nice. And said,
She's
thank you for listening and supporting
person.
Us.
She's a wonderful person. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I talked to her briefly on Facebook the next morning. She said something on Facebook about it. Oh, it was so nice to come to the bar and meet your podcast partner. And I was like, sorry, I didn't get to talk more. Mm-hmm. It was getting pretty busy in there, but it was still cool. So
yeah, they're great people.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, so that'll do it for episode 73. And I said you can go in the show notes and check out a map to McCusker's Tavern and link to all of our social media and all that other kind of stuff. You know, the time off between this episode and the next one will be Thanksgiving here in the United States, and we'll be in the holidays. But, you know, a couple of things that I'm grateful for, man, is, you know, rock and roll. Ryan and I say all the time, man, really believe that music can make a difference in your life. I'm thankful absolutely for every one of you guys out there that listen to us and spend some time helping, joining us on this little journey here as our musical hobby, all of our friends over at Pantheon. And yeah, Ryan, man, I am thankful for you. As you said something on Facebook recently, somebody said you're just a bartender, and you are so much, you are one of the most real people I know. And I tell you that all the time, and getting to do this every 2 weeks, and I learned something, we have a couple laughs, and man, we've been talking music together for over 20 years. And I love it. It's so much fun.
Who's the 30 years, brother?
It is close to 30 years, man. We're getting old, but
yeah. So. Listen, you're my brother. I enjoy doing this show more than you can even imagine. You know, life throws you curveballs all the time. Doing the show for me keeps me happy, keeps me entertained, and it keeps awesome. Me hanging with you, brother.
That sounds good, man. Well, we'll be back in 2 weeks, and it'll be the holidays. So we'll start talking about what we're going to do for our annual holiday episode. And we'll be winding down season 3, which is amazing.
Bruce, you know, my friend.
Yes, sir.
Keep on rocking.
Peace out.
I'm just a prisoner.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.